home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller. Hey everybody, welcome back to a fresh new week of Rated G Radio. I'm your host, Garrett Miller, and we've got a great show today, as we always do. Tonight, we're going to be joined by Suzanne DeWitt-Hall. She's the author of the children's book, Rumpelpimple, and I can't wait to hear the story of this, but also find out all the other cool stuff that she's involved in. And we're going to be bringing Suzanne on in just a couple of moments. Despite technology challenges, we are here live today. Tomorrow, we have Adrienne Blackwell, our Shift Your Reality healer. She'll be on taking your calls. Wednesday, we have Zoe Niklaus out of Seattle, also taking your calls. Thursday, on Rated LGBT Radio, we have my co-host and myself, Mr. Rob Watson. And we're welcoming this week Terry Ray from the new web series called My Sister is So Gay. And the web series also stars Miss Lonnie Anderson from WKRP in Cincinnati fame. So Terry's going to tell us all about that. And then on the Friday night dance party, it's going to be a Friday dance party at 3 p.m. Pacific time. We are welcoming back Mr. Bill Sienkay. He's just returned from the world tour finale of Mr. Neil Diamond out of Australia and New Zealand. So he's going to be updating us on that. And an hour or two, we have disco legendary producer, singer, composer, lyricist, you name it, he's done it, Mr. Bob Esty, and we've got an hour of his disco mixes just in store for you. And that's coming up this Friday. So set your clocks. You can also follow the show right here on Blog Talk at any point. You'll get your daily fresh text or email updates, your choice. The system will just ask you what you want to get, and that's what it's going to give you, and you can stay in touch with the show. You say, why is that important? Because every show has its own unique link, because after tonight, if people want to go back and listen to Suzanne, we want to make sure they can find her. So each show has its own little footprint, and that's why you get the updates. We're also available on Apple's iTunes as a podcast. So if you'd like to go back and download any of the 875 or so episodes we've got, it is there for the taking, and it's all, of course, free of charge. And without further ado, it's my pleasure tonight to welcome Suzanne DeWitt-Hall to the show. Suzanne, how are you?
I am great. Thank you for having me tonight.
I'm so glad you have the fortitude and the perseverance to keep trying to make our technology work here at Blog Talk Radio's platform. We've been trying, just for the listeners to let everybody know, Suzanne is a technology genius, and she is one of my few guests who says, yes, bring it on. I'm ready for it all. And so we have this great little system called the Direct Connect. It's supposed to make everybody sound super sexy and fantastic. We send out this little pre-email address boilerplate letter with all the instructions to the guests before the show. And Suzanne's going, I'm not getting it. I'm like, let me send it again. So we've tried to send it about 48,000 times today, and it's still not hitting her email. We don't know why. So she's called in, and we want to thank you for doing that. So,
well, I hope the audio ends up being okay. You know how smartphones aren't the best.
Yeah, you sound great despite the fact that I think your wife said it's 19 degrees.
That is what I heard. I've been staying indoors like a wise person and watching all the snow accumulate. So she's been giving me updates.
Okay. So what now, I should really just only talk about your writing, but I don't know what it is. I think it's just my grandparents' Midwestern, you know, upbringing. Back in the day, we'd always ask everybody what their weather is like, but you have snow and it has been warm back part of the country, but now you're inundated with the cold stuff. What's it been like?
You know, we really have been spoiled. We went to the grocery store the other day and just making polite talk with the checkout person, and we're all acting like it was a big deal to be getting snow because we've been so spoiled with this warm weather. You know, it's been in the 50s or the upper 40s, and so we've kind of grown out of being used to having actual winter. So we all just have to kind of bite the bullet and get back to normal.
Get back to normal. Is there a normal? Well, you know, over Christmas, I think everybody was out playing basketball and suntanning, and then, you know, we have now, you know, the 17 feet of snow. So, but, you know, we need that wherever it's at, so we appreciate it. So thanks for coming on tonight. I want to thank your wife for connecting the dots and getting us scheduled here today. It's been, probably like 2 or 3 months since we first started talking. And I said, you know, we've got to find a date. My first dates are, you know, and here we are today. So, Diane, thank you for much for making this happen. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. But Suzanne, tell me about yourself. We talked a little bit a long time ago, but for everybody who's hearing your name for the first time, I want to have everybody understand what a fantastic person you are. And hopefully we get the full spectrum tonight of all of the things that you do. Of course, we're going to feature Rumpelpimple here and make sure people can go and buy it on Amazon tonight. But who is Suzanne?
Gosh, that's an interesting question. Well, I'm a freelance writer, and I am working on my first novel, The Great American Novel, of course, which most writers have in play or in the works. I'm married to my wife, as you mentioned. I live in Massachusetts, and I'm busily working on a variety of projects, some technology work. I write for a little regional lifestyle, glossy regional lifestyle magazine here, and write about all kinds of fun stuff, everything from weddings to food to artisans and craftspeople, all kinds of stuff. So that's fun. And I'm working on the second in the Rumpelpimple series, so people understand that a little better once we start talking about that book. But otherwise, I'm in my early 50s. I restarted life in 2010 when my 25-year marriage exploded violently.
Oh, my gosh.
But purposefully. And I'm blissfully happy and really, really grateful that life takes its crazy turns the way it does. So that's kind of me in a nutshell, I think.
So can I ask you about your background as a writer? Did you know at a very young age you wanted to grow up and write the great American novel or write a children's book or write technical papers and things like that? Or did you stumble into it?
I more stumbled into it. You know, there's some people who did know at an early age. And looking back now, I could see some signs. But I'm not one of those people who always knew and who was always a writer. But interestingly, a girl that I've been a friend with since I was probably about 18 or 19, now with the magic of Facebook, you can be in touch with all these people, and she says that she always knew that I was going to be writing. I don't even remember writing that much back then, but I actually was. So, you know, that wasn't childhood, but, well, looking back now, it is. It was childhood, but, it wasn't young childhood. So I stumbled on it. I kind of professionally fell into it. I worked my way into being a technical writer and then doing web development projects and website design and content development and proposal writing. And then throughout those years in and out, I was doing writing that was either spiritually based. I had this kind of, I still do, a fascination about the interconnection of theology and sexuality. So I wrote a blog called Theology of Desire for a number of years. And, of course, in my early years, I wrote all sort of angst, riddles, poetry, and things like that. But it's only been in the last couple of years that I've been able to shift to doing it as a career, you know, to be writing as a career. So that part is still feeling new and fresh to me.
So what's it like getting up every day doing something that you love?
It's great. I mean, it's a starving artist syndrome, but that's okay. I don't, you know, luckily Diane and I, neither of us are very what's the word? You'd think a writer would know the word, but we're not very materialistic. So,
okay.
You know, money, of course, when you're doing something creative, it's often, you're not well compensated. But just the freedom and the joy and writing for a magazine is fun because there's always something, some new project and meeting new people. People are endlessly fascinating, and as you know, you're constantly meeting people who are doing creative things you would have never thought about, you've never heard of before. And that part is really fun, too, and just exploring what people are doing and how they're changing the world in small and big ways.
So do you find that when, you know, you're working with folks that you, I mean, are you ever surprised by the people that you're talking to?
I'm constantly surprised by the people I'm talking to. Anything from, you know, this family, the trio of siblings who took on a sub shop that their grandfather started, and then their father and their mom ran for years, and now they're running it. And they walk across the street every day to pick up the bread from the commercial bakery across the street.
Oh,
and
wow.
Any person who walks into the shop that doesn't have enough to pay for a sub, they'll make them a sandwich and give it to them. And, you know, just tiny, I mean, that's a small example. But then I also had the pleasure of interviewing someone as huge as Wally Lamb in the literary world and hanging out with André Debus III and interviewing a Pulitzer Prize winner, Paul Harding, who wrote this gorgeous book, Tinkers. So the range is wide, and I never know what's going to be next. And people are amazing.
Do you ever get a little starstruck by any of the people that you run into?
Yeah, Wally Lamb was a biggie for me. Because he is just such a, I don't know if you've ever read him or he wrote She's Come Undone, and he was an Oprah, two of his books were Oprah book club picks, and he's a really, really nice guy and does tremendous work outside of his writing, but I was definitely starstruck by him, and yet he's so down to earth and like, you know, regular guy next door type. So,
yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, you know, it's, I think that, you know, that's one of the things that I find so interesting is that, you know, when I, of course I'm out here in Hollywood and I get to go to events and things like that, but you run into folks and they're just like, well, you know, I had to take the cat to the vet today. And then, you know, my kid is, you know, getting an F in Spanish. And then, you know, I got it. And it's like, oh, they're just regular people. They just have different, you know, different jobs that we put on a pedestal for some crazy reason at different times. But,
right.
So
did
with your writing, did you, and I don't know if I've ever asked this question of a guest before, but did you go to school for a particular style of writing, or it was with your career and the web development, things like that, that's really where you honed what you were doing?
No, I didn't go to school. I
love that even more.
What's that?
I love that answer even more.
Yeah, there's a lot of debate about, you know, people get CFAC, what is it, fine arts, degrees in fine arts.
Yeah.
I can't remember the acronym, but we live in an area, you know, we're north of Boston, and it's a huge literary scene in this region, which we're super blessed to have lived here. So there's a lot of debate about how useful they are. Because increasingly the rules are being broken in fiction in particular. They teach you a lot of things. They teach you a lot of skills, and I'm not downplaying the importance of that kind of a degree. But at the same time, people are writing amazing books that break all of the rules and that are just fabulous. There's kind of a lot of debate in the literary community about how valuable those degrees are when it comes to actually being a novelist. They're valuable for many reasons, but as far as being a novelist.
And I think that's one of the interesting things about the guests that we have on the show is, you know, everybody has a different path in life. And just like you said, you get to meet and interview all kinds of interesting people. I'm fascinated by everybody's story on how they got to write their first book. And then it's, you know, well, now what are you going to do for your second book? And I've had people that are, you know, they write, we had a guy on a couple of weeks ago. He wrote this, you know, this kind of like suspense, murder, suspense, love, intrigue type of story in present day, and his next book is a science fiction series that's going to be a trilogy. And I'm like, what? You know, what do you do? You know, because, you know, people aren't pigeonholing themselves into one particular thing, and it sounds like that's exactly the same path you're going on. You've written a children's book, you're working on the Great American Novel, and it's pretty much whatever you want to do, you're doing. Does that ever kind of weigh you down as far as you know, I have to stick with a particular style, or now I have too much freedom. Do you ever find yourself kind of going, gee, I need somebody to rein me in?
Well, there's too many ideas and too many things to write about, that's for sure. And being as having as many projects in play that I do means that mm-hmm. I'm not giving any of them proper attention, and that's definitely a problem. So having more focus, I think, helps drive projects to get done more quickly, for sure. But there's that little thing about, you know, buying groceries and
oh,
stuff
yeah,
like that
yeah.
where you're hoping to get paid
little
for
things like
stuff.
Eating, you know, and paying right. for the electric bill. Yeah, crazy. So how do you prioritize with all of the projects that you work on?
Well, I'll tell you, I prioritize badly. So I'm not one, you know, I tend to be deadline driven, and then I kind of work around that. So
okay.
paying projects, I'll focus on as the deadlines approach, and then I do my other projects when in the calm or in between. But, you know, I'll put my novel down and then we'll pick it up again for a few months. And, you know, the Rumpelpimple book two, that's been in play for, I don't know, probably less than a year. But, you know, so I think I'm good at starting projects and then less good at doing the grunt work of actually getting them completed when it comes to my own work. I mean, definitely paid work is another story. But,
well, yeah,
my
yeah,
own project is easier to get them going.
That. Absolutely, yeah. So, okay, so let's talk about Rumpelpimple, because I have about 7,000 more questions about not your book, but having to do with being a writer that I'd love to get to. But I want to make sure people who are tuning in tonight know that Suzanne has this great book. It's available on Amazon. By the way, folks, we've made it very easy for you. You just click the link that says, buy her book on Amazon here, and then you can go right to her site and you click and buy it. And I always say buy 10 copies, you keep one for yourself, and 9 give away as great gifts throughout the course of the year and help support independent artists around the world, like Suzanne here. And we've also got a link to her website, so go check out that information and help support the cause. But tell us about Rumpelpimple. Where did this interesting title and story come from?
Well, first, the title. Yeah, Rumpelpimple is a werefox terrier. He's our werefox terrier. And I don't know how many, you know, how much of your audience knows the breed. Dog breeds are amazingly diverse. They're kind of like people. But werefox terriers have characteristics that are kind of universal. And there's this mad, passionate love affair that their owners have with them. And, of course, we're different. We're freaks just like the rest of them. And so we ended up getting this little dog, and with no intention of looking for that breed, we fell in love. We saw his little face, and we fell in love with him, and we bought him and brought him home. Turns out they're quite a handful. They're extremely stubborn, extremely smart, and very high energy, which is a challenging combination. So we fell in love with this little guy, and he drove us extremely crazy for the first few months of his life with us. But he always was ending up doing interesting things. So in this case of the book, I fictionalized one of his adventures, which was that Diane was trying to get him out of my hair so that I could get some work done. And she took him for a ride to the grocery store, and she was watching him like a hawk. But when she opened the door, he darted out, and she watched him run across the parking lot, praying the whole time that he's not going to get hit, and then running into the doors of a grocery store.
Oh.
And she flies in as fast as she can and finds him standing up, sniffing at the meat counter. So this is I fictionalized the story and added in the idea that this universal concept of being misunderstood. You know, we all feel it. Kids often feel it, but we get in trouble despite our best intentions. We're trying to do something good, but, you know, the vase breaks or whatever, something happens, and we get in trouble for it. So the idea here was there was a little girl being bullied by a kid, an older boy who was trying to steal her blanket. And so Rumpelpimple rushes in and saves the day. And his mom finds him at the meat counter. She has no idea that he's just done this good deed. And so it's got a few different scenes. There's the idea of anti-bullying, but, you know, the idea of that families are, they love each other, even though they don't always understand each other. Rumple Pimple has a bossy sister cat named Chicken. This is a real life thing, too. So that's the story of Rumple Pimple. I think I forgot to tell you how he got his name. So Rumple Pimple's real name is Charles Montgomery DeWitt Hall, which is a bit of a mouthful. But we're both nickname people. And one day, Werefox Terriers, they've got this crazy curly hair. When it gets long, it gets a little wild. And one day he was looking particularly curly and wild and rumpled. So we called him Rumple Spillskin, and then that stuck for a few days. And then that morphed to Rumple Pilkin and Rumple Stumple. And eventually it settled on Rumple Pimple, and it just stopped. So while his real name is Charlie, he mostly goes by Rumple Pimple.
When you sat down to do this, did you have an agenda or a timeline that you gave yourself to write the book, Suzanne?
No, not really. I hadn't done it before. I'd gone through the whole process. I'd written a few children's books and tried to go through the traditional publishing process, which picture books have been taking this for a while, with traditional publishing going through all the problems that I did. Picture books were really in the decline because they're expensive to print. It takes all the printer's ink, and they're expensive. So publishers weren't picking them up. Luckily, it's reversing again, because picture books are wonderful things. But anyway, so I had tried pitching several books and didn't get any of them picked up, and Rumple Pimple included. And so we decided to go the self-publishing route. So given all that, you know, never having done it before, we had no idea about a timeline. And so, you know, the story itself came together pretty quickly, and then it took a long time to find an illustrator, and then it took a pretty long time to get the illustrations done.
What was your process like trying to find...
And then the actual publishing was quick.
What was your interview process like with the illustrators that you were talking to? Because I know you selected on, is it Kevin Gierman?
Yes. Yep. Well, we looked at a lot of people's work online. You know, people would send us samples or ideas. And so I was looking for the right style and the right price, because, you know, there's some amazingly talented people out there, but they can command more than we could pay for. So it's finding that right mix of personality, style, and cost. Kevin did the illustrations for a friend of ours who has a series of books about adoption. And so when we saw those books, we thought he would be a good fit. We really liked the style and the match.
Nice.
That's how that happened.
When you got a hold of Kevin and you had a meeting of the minds that you guys wanted to work together, how did you describe the characters to him so he would know visually, you know, what you were trying to create? Or did you give him any parameters?
Yeah, so I sent him the book itself, and then illustration specs. And for each scene in each page, I had notes. I included notes in the manuscript that described what I was looking for. So he was very true to what I had outlined that I wanted, but he added a ton more. He added all kinds of personality and the way that he included detail and expression on, like, the cat's face. You know, creating this cat who's looking sort of superior, as cats are. Superior and disapproving, and, you know, mm-hmm. He just did an amazing job of not only following my vision, but adding to it and making it so much stronger visually than I anticipated.
So once it was all done, you said that the printing went fairly quickly. What was it like when you got the first copy in your hands?
Oh my gosh, it was very, very exciting. You know, part of the process is that you're looking for problems. So part of it was super exciting, and then part of it is just, okay, let's hurry and get this the way we want it. So it's extremely satisfying, that's for sure. It's, you know, I had a couple of books prior to this, so it wasn't my first book. It was my first creative book. But so I had that experience before of seeing my work in print and, you know, holding it in my hands. But still, it was so much fun, so much fun. I don't know who was more excited, though. I think Diane might have been more excited in the long run because, you know, she'd been anticipating it as
sure.
much as I was. And, yeah, and just one step away from the creation, you know, I think by the time, it's almost like cooking Thanksgiving dinner. By the time you're done cooking it, you're like, okay, well, let's eat, but I'm a little bit sick of this meal. So I think she wasn't sick of it the way I was. I was a little tiny bit sick of it by then.
Well, then let me ask you this. So, you know, you're sick of the Thanksgiving meal because you've already had 18 servings along the way of getting the meal prepared for the day. How do you,
exactly.
you know, convince yourself to say, okay, it's time for Rumpelpimple 2?
Well, you know, it's a different story, so it kind of re-energizes it. And the response to Rumpelpimple, the people have been saying they can't wait to read the next adventure and things like that. So just people being excited about it, and Diane is excited about it and wants it to happen. You know, there's been interesting things with Rumpelpimple because he has two moms, just like in the real world. And that subtle... It should be no big deal in today's world, but, you know, it's not a book about same-sex relationships, but the fact that he has two moms puts it in its own, it makes a statement about the fact that this is just another family, just like every other family and kids who have parents that don't understand them and that kind of get on their nerves sometimes and, that it's just like any other family. And so that's, you know, one of the purposes in the book was to establish that and to have one more book in the market that kids who are in same-sex, who have same-sex parents can have a book that reflects their life. So this next one, the next adventure, Rumpelpimple's ends up having a sidekick. He's a cat. The cat's name is Georgia. But he's called a he. And so this cat basically is not gender conforming.
Okay.
And so there's this, you know, there's a scene where the cat's owners are kind of looking underneath him, but they have got this sort of, so what look on their face, or, you know, does it really matter kind of. And so, you know, throughout the book, it'll be calling him Georgia, but calling him a he, but it won't be discussed, just like the two moms aren't discussed. It's just there.
It's just there, right.
And so Rumpelpimple has to save him from this situation. Georgia gets himself into danger, and Rumpelpimple's trying to protect him, and he ends up in jail, which is also a true story that Charlie did end up in jail one day. So so that's another
life's
reason.
Never dull there,
kind of,
Dad.
What's that?
Never dull.
No, this is the Wire Fox, less of the Wire Fox Terrier, I'm telling you. So that's another reason to continue the excitement for book two, is that it's providing books for kids who have scenarios that aren't, you know, the Dick and Jane model of, you know, a mom, a dad, a brother, a sister in this sort of white bread kind of world. So that's something else to kind of keep the momentum going for.
Well, you know what? I think that this is a great time to take a real quick break. We're going to hear from our friends at It Matters Radio and then, of course, Rainbow Brew, and come back in 2 minutes, 30 seconds. If you need a quick trip to the bathroom or a cup of coffee or tea or something like that, go do it now and just turn up your speaker so you can hear the promo, and we'll be right back in just a moment.
Welcome to our discussion of It Matters Radio. Our guest today is Angus McWilliams.
Hey, laddie, let's get on with this thing. I'm on my way to a birthday party for Nessie.
You're throwing a birthday party for the Loch Ness Monster?
For first of all, is not a monster. And second of all, I'm talking about Niece Nessie. She's a wee bit of a lovely lass.
I see. Well, okay. Angus, can you give us your thoughts on It Matters Radio?
Aye, wonderful people. They had me on a while back to talk about my book.
Your what?
My book. I wrote a book about the adventures in Scotland.
Oh, I see. A book.
That's what I just said. What are you, a duff man?
It Matters Radio focuses on discovering new talent and bringing important indie artists on the air. Monica, Kenneth, and Carrie offer up meaningful conversation on new music, books, and fun topics. It's unlike any other radio program known to man and woman alike.
You can say that again.
Known to man and woman alike.
Just because I said you can say it again doesn't mean you have to say it again.
I'm just doing my best to show everyone that It Matters Radio basically brings variety, fun, and entertainment with a sincere desire to discover new topics and talent.
Oh, why didn't you just say that?
I just did.
Hey, Letty, remind me when I can listen.
It Matters Radio is on every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
You Americans with your different time zones. We only have one time zone in Scotland.
And that would be...
That would be the time to down a pint or two of ale.
It Matters Radio, for the best in conversation, music, books, and entertainment. Join us Thursday evenings at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Discover the depth, diversity, meaningfulness, caring, guest-focused, friendly, enjoyable atmosphere of It Matters Radio with Ken, Monica, and Carrie.
That's a mouthful if I ever heard one.
Yes, and I'm going to go brush my teeth now. It Matters Radio.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the queen bean, a proud sponsor of The Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
I always love a good cup of Rainbow Brew. And when they approached the show last year to become a sponsor, I said, you know, how in the world are you going to make good coffee with beans grown in Minnesota in the dead of winter? And they sent me a sample packet of it. I was like, holy cow, this stuff is great. It's an LGBT business, it's a small business, and they're in Minneapolis, St. Paul. Three great reasons to support rainbowbrew.com. So if you go to their Facebook page, they often have coupons and dollar off promo codes and things like that. So if you'd like to go and order some Rainbow Brew, please do so. And if you mention that you heard them here on the radio, they actually do a happy dance in the shop before grinding your beans and then mailing them out same day. So go support LGBT businesses around the country. That's rainbowbrew.com. We're joined today by Suzanne DeWitt Hall. She's the author of Rumple Pimple, and she's got the Great American Novel that she's working on. She's a blogger. She loves vintage cookbooks and all of this. But I want to go back, before we change subjects, to her book that's out right now, Rumple Pimple. It's a children's book, and it features same-sex parents that, you know, I was saying during the break, you know, why is it 2016 and that is even an issue? You know, and I think that I lose sight of that. I live in L.A., and, you know, I think – you know, you kind of forget that you're in this major metropolis and things are a little bit more open and accepted than it might be in middle America and different places. Why do you think that we are still such fuddy-duddies in so many parts of the country when we take a look at what is this, you know, really romanticized version of, you know, Leave It to Beaver and you know, the Brady Bunch and things like that, where it's, you know, a certain looking mother and father or certain number of boys and girls or pets or whatever the case may be. Why are we still stuck back in the 50s?
It's a really good question. I think that in part Christianity and probably other religions, but I Christianity is the one I know the best, has a lot to do with it. I came out of I didn't really have a faith formation growing up, but as an adult, I had a lot of brokenness in my life, and I came to faith, and it saved my life, I think, literally. So I did a lot of studying about Catholicism and was very strongly Catholic in my theology. I still am, actually, through a lot of study and a lot of writing for a number of years. My wife came out of a Baptist upbringing. So you've got,
wow.
I know much less about Baptist theology, but I know that, you know, it's strongly against same-sex relationships. So both of us were having marriages that were falling apart or, you know, had been in trouble for a long, long time. And we became friends, and then things shifted. And both of us were like, what is this? How can this possibly even be true? Because everything we believe from a faith perspective, and that faith formed and informed our logic and how we applied our worldview, everything said that it was wrong. So I think that God can work in amazingly strange ways when he wants to bring about shifts in the world. And I think that something that's happening, there's this huge wave of Christian expansion of thought about what love means and about what the Bible, what scriptures were really saying about same-sex relationships and what they weren't saying, and about filtering the scriptures through the lens of this person of Jesus Christ who was love, is love, and whose message was love. So I think that there's this great tsunami coming.
I love that word.
It's in the works and it's building. But, you know, you just have to turn on the debates, particularly the Republican debates, to see that it's, you know, there's a lot of inertia to move, and there's a lot of teaching. There's a lot of very closed thinking and teaching that has come down through Christian traditions, but it's not a done deal. It's still in motion. You know, and you mentioned being in LA. Well, we're in Massachusetts, I think it was the first state to legalize same-sex marriage. Well, we're moving in the spring. We're moving to Missouri because we feel like, well, we've got family there, the grandkids are there, and we feel like we really need to be there during their young years and have time with them. But this is going to be culture shock. It will be an understatement. But we believe, you know, I've been working on materials for a book and probably some classes on a biblical defense for same-sex relationships. So it's not so much needed here in Massachusetts, but it sure is needed down in Missouri. So
we'll see
where all that goes.
Well, I want to thank you for being I'm going to call you a pioneer. You might not like that word, but I'm sticking it to you. Writing groundbreaking books like Rumpelpimple that actually do make, you know, these non, you know, Wally Cleaver type of family dynamics the new normal. Because I'm always shocked when, you know, you see the political debates and the things that come out of some of these people's mouths, and you just, at least from my seat, I sit and listen to them, and we're not going to get into politics. Don't worry about that. But, you know, I sit and listen to them, and I go like, I can't believe how dumb you sound. And it's just like, you sound like you've taken whatever great things that you were going to have be about you and your platform, and you've just taken it back 65 years. It just sounds so crazy. Because even, you know, four years ago or 8 years ago or 12 years ago, I don't think we had this ridiculous dialogue that's going on that we hear now, and it's like, where did this come from? So we need books like what you're doing out there to, you know, let kids know that it's okay. So from a business of, you know, being an author, because it's all fun and games to sit down and write the book and come up with the story, and now you've got your 500,000 copies of books that are sitting in your garage. How do you sell them?
Well, here's what you do. You marry a social media marketing specialist who loves working with authors.
There you go.
My recommendation. You just can't have mine. You can't marry Diane. But Diane has a business called I Promote Books. You can find it at ipromotebooks.com. But so she, what she does, for a business is help people get their books in front of target audiences, and she's extremely creative about how to do that. So it's a multifaceted task to actually sell books. And we've had a kind of crazy summer. The book launched in June, and that was the same time that my mom ended up going into a nursing home, being after a series of falls, and we moved her to where we were living, you know, a few states away, and she was miraculously recovered and ended up being able to go back home, which is very rare in these situations. Yeah, amazing. However, so normally the launch would include lots of things, tons of readings, you know, going to schools and bookstores and all kinds of venues, probably in this case, identifying places where there's a connection, like rescues, rescue organizations. Part of the proceeds of Rumpelpimple go to rescue organizations because we believe strongly in those causes. Anyway, back to the task. It's finding those connections where readers might be and then getting your book out in front of them. It's hard because, you know, you don't want to be doing the hard sell. It's in the social media world, it's all about relationships.
Right.
And, you know, being present and being a participating kind of member of various communities. And Diane's done a great job of that. And she enjoys it because, you know, Weird Fox Terriers is one of the sets of communities. And like I said, these people love their dogs. And Diane adores Rumpelpimple. So it's her people. But, you know, finding the niche groups of people is the best way to go when you have a book. You mentioned your guest who had a mystery, a book, and I can't remember what you said about it, but let's say it was, you know, set within education, then, you know, you might be able to find places where educators who like mystery books are hanging out on the web and letting them know that the book is there. So it's a multifaceted process to get your book sold, and it's never ending. You know, you just keep chugging at it. It's kind of a marathon, not a sprint, is something Diane likes to say.
Did you know going into this that it would be this much? You know, like I call it post-production, but, you know, after the book is written and it's all done, that this is going to have to, you know, be essentially like a full-time career to get it into the hands of everybody in America?
We did know because, as I said, we landed in this wonderful literary community, and we're friends with lots of writers who've published traditionally or who've self-published, and there's all this wealth of experience. So before we produced the book, we were blessed to have lots of time with these people to kind of absorb the understanding, and so we were able to learn a lot. You know, this I mentioned the creativity. One thing that Diane was able to find was I'm a Huffington Post blogger, and my first pieces were on gay voices because I tend to write about theology as it relates to same-sex relationships. So HuffPost has this video, video programming called HuffPost Live, and they have a series called Unicorn of the Week where they honor someone who's making a difference for the LGBT community. And so Diane had Rumpelpimple submit himself for the Unicorn of the Week, and he got it. So you'll have to, if you Google Unicorn of the Week and Rumpelpimple, which is all one word, you'll find the video, and it's hilarious. And it has a, you know, a large readership, or in this case, viewership. But it's kind of all about thinking out of the box and trying to find wacky, weird ways to get the word out.
Now, do you find that is your book in public schools? Is it in libraries? Where outside of the you know, the niche communities, are there other, you know, more blanketed types of ways to get, you know, 100,000 units out to different schools around the country, or is that a different sell altogether?
It's in a few schools and a few libraries, but as I mentioned about my mom's situation, it prevented us from being able to do the blast that we had intended.
Gotcha.
So that's the goal. It's purchasable by libraries. You know, within the system, we used to Create Space, which is affiliated with Amazon because Amazon is the gorilla. You might hate him, and you know, I prefer to buy from independent bookstores, but Amazon is what it is. And Create Space allows you to connect to Ingram and the distribution channels that schools and libraries purchase through. But you still have to get the word out to those, and it's kind of individually, I suppose you can go to a library association convention or something like that. We have not had the luxury of doing that, at least not yet. You know, that's the goal. I wrote a piece about this woman who has an online library of books, picture books for kids related to gay, transgender, and assistive reproductive technology books, things like that.
Wow.
And so, you know, making connections with people like that helps us get connections to libraries.
Sure.
But it's, you know, it's really all about being creative.
And you're in the perfect business for being creative, as an author goes. You know, I just need to make sure everybody knows. We do have a link on the show page, folks. You need to go buy your Kindle version tonight. It's $1.99. You save 80% off of the print list price. But again, go buy those 10 copies of the paperback version. Keep one for yourself. When, you know, Suzanne tours the country on a book tour in the coming months and years, you can go have her sign your book and say, I heard you on the radio. And then, you know, give away 9 other copies to family and friends over the course of this year. Support independent authors and artists whenever you can. And tonight it's our pleasure to have Suzanne DeWitt Hall on the program. Now, Suzanne, you also, we've got about, I don't know, 5 or 6 minutes left before we're going to be wrapping up. I want to make sure we at least touch on some of the other writing that you do and some of your other interests. You have a huge interest in vintage cookbooks. Where did that come about? I love this.
Gosh, that is a good question. I think it actually came from my own childhood because my mom had, I don't know if I received them as gifts or if my mom had them, but we had a couple of cookbooks that were geared to kids, and I loved looking at them. I didn't do that much cooking, but I loved reading them. When Television Food Network started, a couple decades ago, I started watching that and was I found it very soothing. I think that's the best word. I didn't do a lot of replicating. I love to cook, but I didn't really replicate a lot of the recipes, and I don't tend to cook from cookbooks that often, once in a while. But when in the last couple of years, I started buying vintage cookbooks, and I started blogging about the funny stuff I was finding, and the interesting stuff I was finding. I started a Facebook page about those cookbooks and posting, you know, pictures and interesting little snippets. I find it fascinating because each one and each cookbooks from varying eras are like little time capsules. Because they tell you so much about what life was like in that particular era. Whether it's, you know, there's books about cooking under rationing, cooking during war years,
okay.
Or in the 60s, using all these convenience products that were blossoming.
Tell me about a cookbook that talks about rationing and cooking in World War II. Oh my gosh!
Yeah, it's so interesting. So it'll be, you know, focusing on the items that aren't rationed, or with sections about growing your own victory garden so that you don't have to be purchasing them.
Oh,
and they'll have little tidbits about, you know, saving your medals and things so that it can go to the helping soldiers. And in the in these books from like the 60s and the 70s, you can find entire recipes made from canned foods or canned vegetable items. So, you know, you compare a chicken dinner, you know, a Sunday chicken dinner from the, you know, 1930s or 40s to 1960s. And or if it's earlier, you've got instructions for how to pluck the chicken versus how to open a can of chicken, you know.
Wow.
I find it really, really fascinating in providing insight into the culture. So I've got this, you know, one of my projects is then to figure out how to turn this passion into a book. Now on Facebook, for those other people who find this stuff interesting, look for Cookbook Love. There's about, I don't know, 13,000 followers now, and it's growing all the time because you know, I'm not the only one. It's a fascinating thing.
Okay, I'm going to Facebook as you're talking, and I'm actually going to type that in. Cookbook Love. Okay, so I'm going to go find that. And
Cookbook
there we
love.
Go. Wow, it's right there. Okay, awesome. I'm just liked it. Okay, so as we get ready to kind of end our time together, number one, you have to come back when Rumpelpimple 2 is ready, or any other time that you want. So number
one,
for that.
I would love to.
But for the artist that's out there, this author that's out there that says, boy, I'd really like to write my first book, or I'd really like to write my first song, or write my first movie, or do whatever, do you have a couple of minutes of advice that you would give to other creative people who are either young at heart, or, you know, starting out a little bit later in life?
Gosh, you know, I think the just do it at Nike. The just do it advice really can't be beat. I mean, and I'm hearing my head filling with all these trite phrases, but life is short. And I'm starting this at, you know, just before 50 is when I kind of turned to be following what I think I was made to be. You know, I think I was made to be a writer and to follow my giftings. And, you know, hopefully I've got a couple of decades left where I can really, Diane calls it dance. You know, you're dancing in what you were created to be and in dancing in your giftings. Hopefully I have a couple decades, but you never know. You never know. Life, we all have examples of seeing how brief it can be and how things can happen to stop you abruptly. So, you know, if you're looking at your life and saying, how do I want to fill it? Do I want to spend my day behind a desk processing applications for loans? Or do I want, not that there's anything wrong with it. Or do I want to be feeling my soul swelling as I'm considering this concept that I'm going to try to pour out as an image or through the notes that I'm plucking on a guitar? You know, how do you, and sometimes you have to do both, but the point is make sure you find time to do that. Make sure you find time and then follow that. Because the world needs it, I think. You know, the world is a hurting place full of people who are tired and angry and short on love and inspiration. So just do it. Give it a try. And don't give up. That's the other thing, is it, and don't base what you're doing on commercial success. Do it because you were born to do it. I think that there's some kind of a famous quote, and I don't know who it is, and I'm going to bastardize it undoubtedly, but it says something like, there's something about a bird singing, not because, you know, it's going to sound beautiful, but because it has a song, because it's in there, you know, it needs to come out. So let it
how
come
beautiful.
Out.
How beautiful. Yeah.
And then, well, see what happens.
Suzanne, I can't thank you enough for coming onto the show tonight. You know, you've got weather that's below freezing. It's absolutely, you know, frigid and snowy and terrible where you're at, and I'm going to send warm thoughts your way. But for everybody who's listening in tonight, please go to Amazon and purchase. I should ask, do you want people to buy your book a different way?
No, that's the easiest and best way.
Everybody
and
needs to go to Amazon.
Reviews.
Oh, yes, reviews. Five-star Your book is a five-star review already, so we need to make sure it stays a five-star review. That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't matter how you rate it. It's just reviews are important, so put your opinions up there.
Well, but a five-star review is also nice. You don't have to say that. I will.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So, Suzanne, thank you very much for being on the show tonight. I sure appreciate you, and give my best to your lovely wife.
I will. Thanks, Darren. You take care.
Thank you so much. Take care. And just for everybody else, just a real quick reminder where we're going for the rest of this week. On Tuesday's show, we have Adrian Blackwell, Shift Your Reality Healer. Wednesday, we have Zoe Niklaus. Thursday on Rated LGBT Radio, we have Rob Watson as my co-host with my special guest, Terry Ray, of his new web series called My Sister Is So Gay. And then on Friday's Friday Night Dance Party, it's Friday Dance Party because it's at 3. You know why it's at 3? Because I'm going to the wrap party for my first motion picture called Open that Bruce Hart was nice enough to cast me in. My role is bartender. Say those two words 5 times fast. You know what role I actually played. Bartender, hello. I should be opening up Chuckle Huts this weekend, but I get to go to the wrap party. So we're going to do the show a little early. Bill Sinkay is my guest in hour one. He's a world-renowned bass player, and he just came back from Neil Diamond's world tour down in Australia and New Zealand. And in hour number two, we have Bob Esty, legendary disco promoter, writer, producer, singer, all of that good stuff. With the limited time we have left, just a real quick note that this is my song that's currently out right now. I'm going to get the remix. I have to get the okay from the label, but we're going to have the remix, which will be officially launched at the end of this month for Sweat and Testify featuring Deborah Wilson. You'll remember her from Mad TV fame. She always played the Whitney Houston Beyonce character, and she wails it out on this song called Sweat and Testify. It's currently number one on Hottest New Artist on their service for the 8th consecutive week. We'll see you live tomorrow evening on Rated G Radio. Don't drive distracted.
been listening to
Rated G Radio.